This podcast was recorded Thursday, March 5th at 10:27 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this. Yeah, like Congress will actually follow the Constitution and declare war before a major military confrontation. It has not happened since 1942, when we declared war against Bulgaria and Romania. Bulgaria and Romania. Totally forgot about them. Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and all those Snollygosters, those shrewd politicians who think authorizations for the use of military force is a kinder and gentler form of war. I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up in the podcast, could Governor DeWine go bold when it comes to abolishing Ohio's death penalty? But first, the United States is once again waging war in the Middle East. President Trump ordered the U.S. military to join Israel in a massive bombing campaign in Iran. It has killed Iran's supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, and many other Iranian leaders, as well as hundreds of civilians. Given this is an Ohio politics podcast, we will focus on how Ohioans are reacting to this. Small protests have popped up around the state denouncing the attacks, but so far, most Ohioans are basically just watching and waiting. Certainly, the Iranian government spread terrorism and unrest around the Middle East. Its leaders killed thousands of protesters just earlier this year. But questions remain as to why the U.S. and Israel acted now. And the bigger questions, how does this all end? And what is the plan when the fighting stops? Ohio's congressional delegation largely split along partisan lines in reacting to the attacks. Senator John Huston supported the move, kind of. He wrote, "Iran was bad," and his statement said, quote, "Today, the president took action to address the threat Iran poses to America and global stability. I look forward to being briefed and learning more from the administration in the coming days." I would say that's tepid support, a very carefully written statement. Compare that statement to Senator Bernie Moreno's, where he said, "I fully support President Trump's decision to eliminate the threat once and for all, once it became clear there was no other option." That was quite a bit stronger than what Senator Huston said. In Congress, Democrat Joyce Beatty of the Columbus area called the attack reckless, and she said it put American troops in danger. Republicans Mike Carey of Columbus and Troy Balderson of Zanesville basically had the same statement. They both said Trump demonstrated decisive action to halt Iran's nuclear ambitions and state-sponsored terrorism. What's most interesting is to watch congresspeople who face tough re-election campaigns this year. Democrat Greg Landsman in Cincinnati seemed to support the attack without praising President Trump. He said, "The U.S. is destroying Iran's missiles and bombs to stop them from taking more lives." He did not mention President Trump's name once in his statement. "The U.S. is destroying Iran's missiles," he said. Democrat Marcy Kaptur of Toledo did highlight the president in her more critical statement. She writes, "The Trump-Vance administration has singularly launched a regime change war on Iran and deployed U.S. military forces and assets by fiat without congressional authorization," unquote. So Marcy Kaptur, strong in her opposition to the move. Greg Landsman supporting it, but not supporting President Trump. Interesting there, both Landsman and Kaptur face difficult re-election campaigns. So take that for what it is. But the guy who many were watching was Ohio's J.D. Vance. The former U.S. senator, now vice president, once strongly said the United States should not get involved in endless wars. Here he was on the floor of the Senate in 2024 arguing against funding for the war in Ukraine when he pointed out long wars we have fought in Afghanistan and Iraq.
Those same experts, of course, counseled us that we must invade Iraq because Iraq has weapons of mass destruction. And yet, Iraq had no weapons of mass destruction. And the war led not only to the destruction of 5,000 American lives and many, many hundreds of thousands of innocent people beyond that, but also led to the regional empowerment of Iran, which now we are told by those same experts is the biggest problem that we face in the Middle East. Now those experts have a new crusade.
In the year or so after that address, he became vice president, and the U.S. bombed an Iranian nuclear site, obliterating it, according to President Trump, making Iran less of a threat, according to national security experts. But soon after this week's attacks, Vance called Iran a major threat and defended President Trump starting a war in the Middle East.
What's so different about this, Jesse, is that the president has clearly defined what he wants to accomplish, and there's just no way, I said this before the conflict started, I'll repeat it again, there's just no way that Donald Trump is going to allow this country to get into a multi-year conflict with no clear end in sight and no clear objective. What is different about President Trump and...
That's J.D. Vance on Fox News. Critics say the president and his administration, they have not laid out a clear justification or strategy going forward. The justification for the attacks has shifted from supporting Iranian protesters to Iran's nuclear threat to Iran's ballistic weapons to regime change. Secretary of State Marco Rubio said we had to protect American forces because Israel was going to attack. Maybe it's one of those. Maybe it's all of those. Maybe it's none of those. But video recordings, social media statements, they tend to last longer than wars. Democrats paid for not supporting the first Gulf War way back in the 1990s. Democrats and Republicans paid the price for supporting the Iraq War in the early 2000s. Now, a generation later, we will see how these statements, how these votes in Congress stand the test of time. We'll be right back.
Each story you hear on Planet Money starts with a question. What happens if we refund tariffs? Why are groceries so expensive? At NPR, we stand for your right to be curious, because the forces shaping our world can be hard to see. Follow NPR's Planet Money wherever you get your podcasts and start seeing how the economy really works.
Okay, welcome back to Snollygoster. Before we get to a roundtable discussion, a favor. If you like what you hear, please give us a good review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcast. And don't forget to tap the follow button so you get to hear every episode automatically in your feed. All right, let's turn to a topic we have not talked about in a while, and that is the death penalty. Governor Mike DeWine has less than a year left in his term. He has long expressed serious reservations about the state's death penalty. Ohio has not executed an inmate in his nearly 8 years as governor. He has postponed every execution to come before his desk, citing the inability to get lethal injection drugs. The governor now hints he may ask state lawmakers to permanently end the death penalty in the state. To dig a little deeper on this, we turn to a panel of Statehouse insiders, reporter Andrew Tobias of Signal Statewide, OSU political scientist Herb Asher, and Republican strategist Mike Gonadakis. Mike Gonadakis, you're associated with Ohio Right to Life.
Yes, sir.
Do you support the governor, if he does, call for the end of the death penalty?
Okay, so at Ohio Right to Life, our mission statement is to protect and defend innocent human life from conception until natural death. I'm going to take off my Ohio Right to Life hat and just leave my 27-year practicing attorney hat on right now. The law in the state of Ohio allows for the death penalty if you have a unanimous verdict of a jury of your peers, right? That is the law in Ohio. And we have a governor here who says, I don't like this law, so I'm not going to enforce it. The moratorium is not based on law. It's lawlessness, okay? Look, Mike DeWine is a friend of mine. I voted for him every time he's run for office. But legally speaking, he is not upholding the law of Ohio, which he's constitutionally required to do.
So getting back to Ohio Right to Life, they have no opinion on the death penalty. Where do they stand?
We're agnostic. We don't support it or oppose it, the death penalty, because our mission statement says to protect and defend innocent human life from conception until natural death.
Mm-hmm. So is this poll show, Herb, 58% of Ohioans support doing away with the death penalty if it is replaced with life in prison without parole.
Yeah.
So will the legislature do this eventually, do you think?
This legislature, no. But I think a lot of people would say, okay, as long as you're telling me that the guilty party will never see freedom again. I can accept the notion of life imprisonment without parole, but I don't think it's going to happen in Ohio with the current legislature.
If there would there be enough votes, Andrew, if all the Democrats presumably voted to abolish the death penalty, are there enough Republicans to join them to give them a majority to pass an abolishment?
So I suspect not, but when we asked House Speaker Matt Huffman about it this week, he basically said he hadn't polled the caucus about it, but he personally was very strongly opposed, and he hasn't shown that he imposes his views on everybody else. He kind of takes the temperature of the caucus, but you also had Attorney General Dave Yost come out and say that he basically backs up Huffman. So it's hard to say without actually counting the votes, but just given the split that there is in the Republican Party, I'm doubtful that there's a vote there.
In the past 6 years, there's been bills introduced by Republican Senator Steve Huffman, not Matt Huffman, Speaker, has introduced bills, Niraj Antani, Republicans, to abolish the death penalty, and it's always died a slow death in the legislature.
But have they ever come to a vote, or have they just not made it to the floor?
It's never made it out of committee.
But if it did, that's the key. That's where the leadership comes in. They can stop a bill from getting to the floor, but if it got to the floor, would it pass?
Because of my position with the High Rights Life, willing to bet you it would fail the vote. And the speaker's not going to bring a vote to the floor if the votes aren't there. And neither will the Senate president in the Senate.
Vote that the votes aren't there to pass in aligned with his opinion.
No, I think Andrew said it best. Yeah. You know, our speaker's doing a great job. You know, he lets the legislators legislate. And when they get together in their own caucus, private, behind closed doors, they'll talk about it. The votes aren't there. They're not bringing it.
He said it would need overwhelming support, the Republican caucus. Mm-hmm. What does that mean? It's not one vote more than 50?
It's from whelming to overwhelming, maybe with just one vote difference.
He'd like the first 50 votes to come from Republicans.
Yes, nailed it. Yeah.
If DeWine pushes this becomes an issue in the campaign, right? In the governor's campaign, Vivek Ramaswamy he's kind of vague, but he says he basically supports it in extreme cases. I don't know where Amy Acton stands on it. I assume she opposes it.
Yeah, okay. I mean, the politics of just saying that you support being tough on criminals, it's just like a pretty easy stance to stake out. And so there's definitely principled reasons to oppose it. But I think that those fundamental politics are why this issue hasn't really gone anywhere in a Republican state like Ohio.
Yeah, I've seen a Republican red state. I've seen tremendous amount of polling on this issue, Mike, because of my position with Ohio Right to Life. Ohioans overwhelmingly support the death penalty still.
You don't. So you disagree with the poll that says if it's replaced by life without parole?
Absolutely do.
Is this a generational thing, Herb? Because of lethal injection drug problems and the companies not wanting the drugs being used to put someone to death, Ohio's not alone. A lot of other states have slowed their execution rate.
Yeah, I think the average citizen is not that aware of the lethal drug problem.
Yeah.
I think they are, though, aware that when you impose the death penalty, it goes on and on and on with incredible number of court challenges, and people can be on death row for decades or whatever, and you have families of the victims who are going through this. So I think a lot of people, when you frame the issue a certain way, will say, well, look, if you can resolve it by saying that the criminal will be in jail for the rest of his or her life, that may be just neater for a lot of people.
Another thing that is influencing public opinion is the number of exonerations. Folks who are on death row, sentenced to death, and it comes to come out that they are innocent. And that's been more and more with DNA and technology and things like that. That's weighing on some of this debate, right, Andrew?
Yeah, and I think, too, that it's kind of like, in addition to that, the position of the Catholic Church, like there's if you look at it from a coalition standpoint, there is a split in the Republican Party about this. And it's hard to say. You ask if it's a generational issue. Maybe that will be an opportunity for it to change over time.
Is there any way, there are 109 people right now on death row, is there any way before he leaves office that Mike DeWine commutes all of those sentences to life in prison without parole?
Well, since he will not be running for office again, I'm thinking about what the last days of the Celeste administration. Mm-hmm. Remember that?
Yeah, wow.
You know.
That's a great point.
Yeah. What happened? Remind us, for those of us who weren't here.
Well, he commuted an awful lot of sentences.
Sure did. And
the reaction was he commuted some sentences that shouldn't have been commuted, but if he's not going to run for office again, he can put up with the political backlash.
Do you see Mike DeWine doing that? It seems out of his personality, but if he's firm in this, you might.
I hope he doesn't, because I would remind him that he's also a lawyer and he's duty-bound to uphold the laws of the state of Ohio as a lawyer.
The law allows him to commute sentences.
It sure does, but I just hope he doesn't do that. You know, I don't think that's his place, and we elect governors, not kings.
He's a former prosecutor, too. That's another layer of intrigue in this thing.
Yeah, people always kind of wonder what Mike DeWine Unleashed looks like as kind of like the near end of his term. And you know, often we just kind of see him kind of doing the same thing he's always done. But I'll say that this is one of the things that he actually really cares about. And so if you're betting on what's an area where he might kind of color outside the lines a little bit, it might be something like this.
This is something definitely to watch. There is a fair amount of speculation that DeWine may do something bolder than he usually does on this issue. Commuting death sentences would be controversial, hugely controversial. If DeWine feels strongly about it, would he take such strong action? We shall see. Time now for our Snollygoster of the Week segment, where we honor the shrewdest politician or political move of the past week. This week, we give it to Delaware County Board of Elections member Melanie Lanahan, who is also running for re-election to the State Republican Central Committee. Her opponent for the committee seat is Rebecca Norse, and she messed up. As first reported by the Columbus Dispatch, Norse put the wrong date on her filing paperwork. At first, the Delaware County Board of Elections said, you know, the rules are the rules, and they took Norse's name off the ballot. Well, Norse appealed, asked for grace, and the board reconsidered it. At this meeting, the board split. The two Democrats voted to put her name on the ballot, but the two Republicans said no. And one of those Republicans was Norse's opponent, Melanie Lanahan. So instead of recusing herself because of an obvious conflict of interest, Lanahan voted to take her opponent off the ballot. It's now up to Secretary of State Frank LaRose to break the tie and decide this issue. So, for not recusing herself because of the conflict of interest, Melanie Lanahan gets our Snollygoster of the Week award. And the story may not end there. Another Delaware County Republican has challenged Lanahan's position on the Central Committee, saying Lanahan does not live in Ohio. Lanahan insists she is a resident of Delaware County, even though she has homes in other parts of the country. I will say, for a relatively sleepy, suburban, rural county, Delaware has some interesting politics. That will do it for this week's edition of Snollygoster. We are part of the NPR network. For our digital producer, Michael DeBonis, and our audio engineer, Dalton Jones, I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.